Superchargers, headlights, and more. With over 122 million parts, eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Stay on your A-game with all the parts you need at the prices you want. It's easy to bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Salutations, everybody. I'm Mark Madden, the super genius. It's time to style and profile, and there's only one man to do that with. He is the 16-time world champion. He's the nature boy, Ric Flair. Nate, how are we this fine morning?
Fantastic. Great weekend of pro football. Great weekend of boating. Had lunch with the Gronkowski family Saturday. Met with my agent yesterday, which required a 1 o'clock start time at the bar. And as Aaron Rodgers threw his last touchdown, I got back in the house.
Well, that is a pretty good weekend, but we teased something last week that we got to get right to. You talked about some kind of story you had, some kind of dirt on the great Tony Schiavone.
Some kind of dirt?
Well, cough it up, Nate. Let's hear about Tony's misadventures.
I own Giovanni. Have you not noticed that between Jim Ross and Tony Schiavone, they talk about me and tell stories about me literally at least once a month, right? So, Tony, I'm going to let you off the hook because I love Lois and I love your family. So I'll just tell you one that'll probably just be telling on myself, which I always do. So, Mark, when I was the Black Scorpion, the deal with Al Perez quit WCW because he didn't want to be the Black Scorpion. So we went to St. Louis. It was either going to be me or Barry, the Black Scorpion, and I felt like Barry and Arn were a much better team. They were wrestling Doom with Nancy. And there was a big, big match for all of them. So I went and bought a $2,000 studded cape. You've seen pictures of it. Put the mask on, and I had to go underneath the ring for 5 hours. So you can imagine. And the minute I came up, everybody knew who I was anyway, right? So after being frustrated, thinking I had a terrible match, realizing that I'd just gone from being Ric Flair, so I don't know how many times world champion, to the Black Scorpion, to appease Jim Herd and the company. Or no, that was Ole's idea. I went back to the Marriott Hotel and I proceeded to be the Black Scorpion. And I was in search of Sting all night long. Then I found a volunteer. And I invited the volunteer to my room at the Marriott. And I called Schiavone. Schiavone! It's the Black Scorpion. Come down to my room now. The rest is history. I'll let him tell the rest about his podcast. No, but I've had the most fun I have with Schiavone. When I first met Tony, I would say, he was calling balls and strikes for the single A Charlotte O's. And I said to Jimmy Crockett, I said, that kid out there calling balls and strikes should be working for you because these guys, the announcers they had there were so old. as I am as old now, you know, not talking bad about anybody, but they just needed young, fresher people that were more, you know, I think more people that more had more appeal for the audience. So that's how Tony got his gig there. So then I helped Tony get to New York, and then I helped Tony get back. So I've been a big part of Tony's life. And I have taken Tony under my arm a few places, you know, and just had a great time. That's all I can say.
Well, nobody's Lois, better.
I love you, Lois.
Well, nobody's better than Tony, and he's certainly having a great run now in AEW.
Hey, the guy is so damn good. He doesn't get nearly enough credit. Tony Schiavone is really good at what he does.
Well, and you talked about the mix back in Mid-Atlantic Wrestling. Bob Caudle was, I believe, the primary announcer back then.
Tom Miller. Bob was in Raleigh.
Oh, okay. Okay, but I thought the team of Tony and Bob, I thought Tony gave Bob a little bit of a second life, a second breath.
Yeah, well, Bob Caudle was fantastic. But I just think, you know, like everything in sports now, I think that I have to keep pushing. As well as talent, you got to keep pushing younger guys into these announced positions. I mean, I look at Romo, and Romo to this day was a great football player. I don't know if he'll ever be in the Hall of Fame, but he's 10 times the announcer he was a football player. Tony Romo to me right now is the guy.
I agree.
And Mark, you see a lot of football. Tony Romo, from the day he walked behind that mic, he took on a whole new stance.
Well, and being a good player is no guarantee you're going to be a good announcer either.
Exactly.
For example, Ray Bourque, who's one of the top defensemen of all time in hockey, he became an analyst for ESPN. Mm-hmm. This is years and years ago, and they literally had to let him go after a week. He was that
really
bad.
Yeah.
So it fits some better than others, but you're right about Tony Romo, and certainly Tony Schiavone is, to my mind, the three best announcers ever in wrestling history are in no particular order: Jim Ross, Tony Schiavone, and Lance Russell. And I think whoever's fourth is a relatively distant fourth.
I would agree.
I'd say I'm fourth. What do you think?
Well, if you'd done it longer, you would be number one.
That's nice of you to say, but I think
at some point in time, as an announcer, you have to be a babyface. And you are incapable of being nice.
Oh,
for a period of time.
Still am. That's in my radio career. I got to tell you, though, and people are going to give me a hard time for this, but I watched the guys doing color today.
Yeah.
And I'd be better than all but a couple of them. No question about that. All these years later, with what I've learned about announcing, and for that matter about wrestling, I'd be better than all but a couple of them. And one thing I would know, too, is that you don't have four and five people on mic. That's one thing about AEW that frustrates me a great deal. Their announce team is often four or five guys.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And all that happens then is you try to get your shit in. I'm sorry, no matter who you are, you're human. You're going to try to get your voice heard above the others instead of painting a picture. And when you have that many guys on mic too, Nate, you can never use silence as a dramatic device because there's never any silence.
Exactly. I couldn't agree more.
Well, I've given my soliloquy. Let's move on because we got a lot of interesting topics to cover on today's show. Jeff Hardy exited a match at a house show rather abruptly for WWE. He went through the crowd, and WWE apparently wanted to send him to rehab, and he refused. So now he's been released. Jeff Hardy is one of my favorite performers of his era and one of my favorite people of all time. I consider Jeff a fan and a friend. So no doubt I'm rooting for him in this predicament, and hopefully he finds his way back more personally than professionally, because I think he has enough money to live the rest of his life. And certainly his reputation can never be sullied. He's one of the best performers, like I said, of his generation.
Well, you know how I feel. I couldn't agree more. I love Jeff. I love his wife, Beth, and they're above all else, they got a great relationship. Beth backs his play all the time. I've talked to them both. And I think, without saying something that's not accurate, I think Jeff just decided to say to them, hey, I've been there and done that. I went one time, and they told me I had to go back again. I said, no. You know, they wanted me to stay 35 more days, And it, you know, and it really, at first, it faked me out because I you wake up and you're on an unair-conditioned La Quinta, right? And instead of drinking 20 drinks a day, I dip two cans of Skoal, smoke two packs of Marlboros, and drank 20 Diet Cokes. So what's the difference? Never went to the gym one day. And, you know, I was supposed to be the role model, right? I don't think so. It took me 2 days to fake them out. Because, you know, the people, the majority of the people, and I'm not saying it's right or wrong, it didn't work for me, that are the counselors in these facilities are former addicts themselves. So while they're talking to you and trying to help you get a better understanding of what your issues are, they're recovering themselves. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think that gives them a good perspective, though, don't you?
Yeah, but at the end of the day, it's just a work. It's a work.
Oh, I don't know about that, Nate.
Yeah, it's a work. From my experience, it was. Because I've seen the guys, but I've seen people that I was working with that were helping me break down on a job. So why not? I'll give you an example. I woke up in the morning, right? First of all, do you want to hear the story?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, so I get out of a plane at the airport. I'm driving back up to Wendy's house, right? 35 miles away with Wendy. And Hunter calls Wendy. He goes, put me on the phone with Nate. So I go, okay. I said, what's up? He said, you're going to rehab. I said, oh, no, I'm not. He said, oh, yeah. And I said to him, who do you think you're talking to, X-Pac? He said, no, I'm talking to you. You're going to rehab. I said, well, let me get my gear together. I'll go next week. He said, you're going today. So I'm unaware of all this. I get to Wendy's house, and my whole family is there. Ashley, Megan, David, Joe Gomez, everybody that loves me. They were having a...
intervention.
Intervention. And I didn't fight it. I said, okay, I'll go. You know, so I got a six-pack of beer while I went to the airport. I got there 3 hours early. I went in the club there, and I drank 14 double Kettle One and cranberry. Got in a plane, drank four Bloody Marys. I said, if I'm going in, I'm going in. Got off the plane, got a six-pack. Checked in at 2 o'clock, and they gave me all the drug tests, right? I didn't even blow a number. I called Hunter, my blood pressure was 120 over 78. the guy goes, there's something wrong with you. I said, I've been hearing that for years, young man. I woke up in the morning and not realizing I was in an unair-conditioned La Quinta. So I walk out in the steps, I light up a Marlboro, and I look across the terrace, the patio, and the doctor that was checking me in was sitting outside a room across from mine. So I go get my roommate and say, isn't that the doctor? Who's that guy? I said, he looks like the doctor who checked me in last night. He said, he is a doctor. I said, what's he doing here? He said, he's in rehab.
Well, now hold it. If you were in a La Quinta, were you unsupervised? I mean, how did they know you weren't indulging?
Oh, no, you're checking and all this. Trust them. They wrote roll call and had you get up in the morning and do all this. Go to the grocery store. Can walk around like a mark, like nobody knew me, right? Orlando, Florida. I mean, Tampa, Florida. I was humiliated.
Well, that reminds me of the story Scott Hall told me when he checked into Hazelden in Minnesota.
Yeah.
On the drive up there, he got severely impaired, shall we say.
Yeah.
And when he checked in, they said, well, Mr. Hall, we can't believe you showed up here in this condition. And he goes, well, I figured it would give me a shot at winning most improved.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I just was ready to go in, but... I had been drinking so much and so heavily for that long period of time that I didn't even blow a number.
Well, what do you think is in store for Jeff's future? Because
anything he wants, anything he wants. I think he knows he made a mistake, and I don't even know. I don't know any more than that. But I know Jeff Hardy is such a great talent. He does have the money, as you mentioned. He probably doesn't need to work. But like all of us that want to work for different reasons, it's hard to walk away from something. I've known those boys since they were young kids that came to see me in Fayetteville and Raleigh with their dad, I've known their dad. Matt and Jeff are two of the greatest greatest guys in my lifetime that I've had just an immense amount of fun with and have an immense amount of respect for. So Jeff would do whatever he wants to do.
Well, no question. I'm a fan and friend of the Hardys as well.
If Tony Khan doesn't hire him, right away, he's already got a job.
Well, yeah, and I certainly think the Hardy boys as a team have to have one last run left in them, but obviously that should be on Jeff's schedule, and whenever he feels he's ready to do it, he's got to take care of himself first, and I'm sure he will.
He will. It comes and goes. And here's the deal. I'm not defending the WWE here, but you have to remember they're a publicly traded company, and they get looked at and scrutinized at a whole different level than one that's not. So I don't think they had a choice but to tell Jeff he could go. Not because they don't want Jeff Hardy there, but because there's just some things that being publicly traded allows you to do and not do.
Well, here's the party story. At your 70th birthday party, Jeff made it a point to come to me when he was leaving. He goes, listen, I think you're a great guy, and I'm glad we're friends. And Jeff's always said stuff like that. Like, wrestling's not always been receptive to me in the years since I've been absent. But the Hardy boys, whenever they're in Pittsburgh, both of them, one of them, I always hear from them. And again, I'm rooting for Jeff. I think he's just a terrific guy. Now, here's a topic we teased last week, H, and I find it real interesting. We're going to test your memory here. But it's the history of the Nature Boy character. Because, way back when I saw Ric Flair wrestle on Mid-Atlantic TV, holding my UHF antenna at the house in Pittsburgh so I could watch it on, I think it was the Johnstown TV station. I had no idea what Nature Boy meant, and I'm not even sure I know what it means now. That comes from a song, right? I think it's a song that's even older than me.
No, actually, I got that from Raquel Welch in 1978 at the Hilton Hotel at the airport.
I hope that's not all you got from her.
Well, that's my story. Because only people are still alive. I don't know where it comes from.
There is a song called Nature Boy, and I think that's where Buddy Rogers got it. That segues. Buddy Rogers was the original Nature Boy.
Yes.
And you studied his gimmick while you were laid up after your plane crash, correct?
Well, no, that's not accurate, too. George Scott came to me, who I never get enough thanks and enough gratitude from me, as George Scott was the booker. And he knew Buddy real well. And he said, Rick, I think we should try something with you where you could, patting yourself a little bit after Buddy Rogers. Just polish your work up. I could never look like Rogers. Rogers had one of these incredible physiques. And he could do the strut better than any of us ever have thought of doing it. And what Buddy's claim to fame is that he was the first guy to ever do high spots. I don't know if you ever knew that or not.
Buddy
The first guy. He's the first guy to ever do high spots. Look at it. One tackle, drop down, leapfrog. That was Buddy Rogers. And I never saw footage of him until later on after I became the Nature Boy. But what Buddy did is he traveled with a couple guys, one of them being Billy Darnell. And Darnell was probably as good a worker, if not better, than Rogers. But he would send these guys into the territory before he went there, wrestle these guys. It would be like me sending in Steamboat to get warmed up to wrestle Sting. Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah.
And he had these phenomenal matches with Billy Darnell. There's another kid, too. I can't think of his name. And then, of course... And he had a bodyguard with him, a guy that was pretty tough. Ruffy Silverstein traveled with him, who was a shooter in college.
Bobby Davis was his manager, as I recall.
Yeah. I never met him, but I mean, I know the Silverstein guy was tough. And I know Darnell was a hell of a worker, but that's how he got over it. Not only was he great himself, but he put guys in positions to put him over after having a great match as he ascended to the top guy in the territory. I'll give you an example. Buddy told me one night, and you can look it up. I'm sure the wrestling historians will be all over this. He wrestled Carpentier in Montreal Whipper Billy Watson in Toronto, Pat O'Connor in Comiskey Park, 54,000 people, 1954. And I want to say he wrestled Gene Kaniski or someone like that the first night. He told me he made $49,000 one week in 1954.
That's a lot of money now, let alone in 1954.
He got his money. He got his cash when he walked in the door. They were sold out everywhere. He drew a ton of money.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Now, how similar would you say your act was to Buddy's? Once your act evolved and you would, like you said, had seen footage of him, how similar was it?
Well, it's not fair for me to say it. I'll just do what Harley did. Flair took Rogers' stuff to a whole new level. Problem?
Well, no, having seen tapes of Buddy, and not very many because not a lot exist, I would tend to agree with Buddy,
back in those days when you're cutting a promo, I'm going to murder that bum. You know, I mean, that would never fly today. So I just added, you know, a little flair, a little color. And but once again, I wish I could have had his physique. If I had his physique, man, who knows? But it worked out for me. And I just, where Buddy wore jackets, I went and got the long robes. But, you know, the day I met him, I've told you the story, he walked over to me in the locker room in Greensboro, looked at me and said, "There's only one diamond in this business, kid, and you're looking at him." Hence the promo, "Diamonds are forever."
Now, you ultimately worked with Buddy. He was twice. 57, had just come back after a 15-year layoff. What was that like? Were the matches good?
No. Fast and quick. But those guys back then, the only guy that of that age group that I wrestled towards the end, I wrestled Gene Kaniski for an hour a couple times, and I wrestled Pat O'Connor, who brother was tougher than shit. I mean, wrestling Pat for an hour in St. Louis was a long night, because Pat was a tough guy, and Buddy wasn't a tough guy at all, just a great performer. But they were so quick, and, you know, if you take that many years off the business and come back, you're going to be, and I was so excited, you know, and plus the fact I was still relatively green too, Mark. So I wasn't the Ric Flair of 1982. I was just a kid, you know, trying to learn the business myself. So they were far from great, but I really enjoyed it. And I look back on it now and I just say, you know, it's a feather in my cap to have ever been there. It's kind of like, you know, I got to wrestle Ray Stevens of, you know, a couple times later, when Ray came to the Carolinas, but that was like wrestling, to me, like wrestling God, because there'll never be another Ray Stevens, just so you know.
Now, never. did Buddy like what you did with his gimmick, and did you two get along when you met?
He was fine with it. Yeah, I actually went out with Buddy and his wife. He came over to my house. I went to his house with George Scott and his wife. Yeah, I got along with him good. He's just an arrogant guy, but, you know, I, who was I to say anything, you know what I mean? I was just lucky enough, but my God, I'm sitting here with Buddy Rogers. The funny thing is, in Charlotte, everybody knew who I was and didn't know who he was. So I don't think he was happy about that. But
well, that's like when the first time I met Ric Flair, I was just thrilled to be sitting across the table from Ric Flair. And then my liver turned to glass after a couple years. now, the only other actual nature boy, I think, of any repute was Buddy Landell. Yeah. You worked with him and Crockett briefly. How is he as a talent?
Great. I met Buddy. I first saw Buddy in San Juan, Puerto Rico. I was wrestling Carlos Colon. And Buddy was on the undercard there, and he came out, and I talked to him, and he was just Buddy Landell then. And I think Dusty or JJ, you know, came up with the idea. But Buddy Landell was a hell of a worker.
Yep.
He just had demons, as do we all. And the demons, you know, got the best of him. And I don't know why. I've dealt with that on a personal level with, you know, with my son, but you can't explain it, and I can't tell you why or how, but they just got the better of him. Because he certainly was a talented kid. He could talk. He could work. He was a nice guy. I had fun with Buddy. You know, life was... He always treated me with respect. I'll say that. And I don't know what happened with Buddy, but, you know, he got sidetracked, as have a lot of people, you know, with a substance abuse issue.
Well, he was managed by J.J. Dillon.
Yep.
And that was before J.J. and the Horsemen. And in a promo, you said J.J. looked like Porter Wagoner, as I recall.
Yeah.
That was certainly. And look at that picture. He does look like Porter Wagoner.
Yeah, he does.
My God.
Porter Wagoner had better hair.
Well, I think he had more hair. But how come you and Landell never had a full-blown feud at Crockett? Because that was the plan, wasn't it?
I think because of the issues I just brought up, I think he missed a couple shows.
He just no show.
He would just drift off, and you wouldn't find him for a couple of days. Then you're going to have to fact check that, but that's the only reason. I mean, we wrestled probably 20 different times. But
how were the matches?
Good. You know, it's probably he wanted to be the heel. I wanted to be the heel. So it's never going to be the best match when you got two guys. Because I wasn't going to change my character, you know. I think there was interest in it, but as you know, you got to be there every day. You can't be late. Your name's on the marquee, and you're not there, and the people pay all this money. Even in those days, the tickets were a lot cheaper. If you're not there, you know, it's a reflection on the promotion, which they're not likely to receive kindly, and it's a reflection on you. So that's the only thing I can tell you is that, like Terry Taylor tells that story about me pulling into New Orleans, hungover and everything, and that's probably true. But after 50 minutes, he couldn't breathe. So.
Yeah, but like Arn always says, you're a Martian. Not too many people could pull that off, but I think that's unique to Ric Flair.
I have the gene.
Now, I liked Buddy. I thought he was a good performer,
yes.
But he, because of many reasons, never took that next step. And it begs the question, how do you imitate Ric Flair? That's a pretty ballsy move, whether it's Buddy or anybody else, but no matter what, you're going to come off as a Xerox.
I don't know. I don't know whether that's a good thing or a bad thing. There are a lot of people who have tried over the years. Look at a lot of gimmicks that you know, the guys coming out with girls. That's been going on for years, but I was the first.
That picture back up, Steve. Was that AJ Styles in the Ric Flair robe? AJ?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know he did that in TNA?
I think so, yeah.
Wow.
But it wasn't, AJ wasn't trying to imitate. AJ, I could never work as good as AJ Styles, trust me.
Oh, I don't know about that, but he's brilliant. He's
No, he's phenomenal, yeah.
One of the best of his generation, maybe the best. But now, I liked it when Jay Lethal didn't do the Nature Boy gimmick, per se, but he imitated you in TNA. That was pretty funny.
Yeah, it was entertaining. I'm thrilled that he's I think he's with AEW now, that he's finally with a major promotion. Not saying that Ring of Honor isn't or wasn't, but I think Jay's got a ton of talent, and he can talk, which is a big part of the show. You know what I mean?
No question. I think Jay's tremendous. I will say this though about his little mini feud with you and TNA, even though it was funny. That's not really a long-term thing, is it? Because once you've seen it, you've seen it.
Yeah, plus I was 62 years old, so there wasn't much to see.
I thought you were in your prime, Nate. Come on.
I was, but you're the only one I can convince that of.
Well, what about Lethal when he imitates Randy Savage? I like that, too.
Fantastic. Ooh, yeah, dig it. Yeah, he can do really, I'll tell you, He can do me and Savage better than anybody I've ever heard. It's incredible. But once again, I mean, that's a tribute to how much time he spent watching TV, because he has us both down pat. It's a lot. It's fun to hang out and fun to have him do that.
Nate, I got to tell you, to put the spotlight on myself for a second, my radio career is based on talking like you. No question. There was an old-timey Pittsburgh radio guy named Doug Hirth that helped me break into radio. I started late. I was in my 30s. And my radio persona is a combination of Doug Hirth and Ric Flair. No question about that. And by the way, people complain that I talk too loud on this podcast. That's just the way I talk. I mean, come on.
I know. I'm fully aware of it. Hey, I'm forced, just because we're in this business now, to look at the comments on social media, too. They're very entertaining.
Yeah, they're really complimentary for me, certainly.
Yeah, well, I guess they seem to be enjoying it. I'm having fun, and we haven't shot anybody yet either. So
we're doing we're doing a great job. And one last thing about the Jay Lethal imitation is TNA in that period a bit underrated. A lot of stars were there, and I thought some good stuff happened.
Well, there was a ton of talent there. I don't know what kept them or held them back. I mean, I think some of the booking decisions were an issue, but they've had some great talent come through there. I mean, great young talent. You know, it's like right now, you're seeing a dry spell right now in the developmental stages for both companies. It's hard to come up and be on top in this business. I mean, you look at the group with Roman and Seth and Dean, and then you've got Charlotte, Sasha, and Bayley, and so there were six huge stars right there. But if you look back into it, how many more have come along?
Oh, no question. And how many more coming along?
That weren't in the business already. I'm talking about to come right out of a developmental program.
Have you seen Rick Steiner's kid, Bron Breakker?
I have, yeah. He looks great.
Yeah, he's amazing, isn't he?
Yeah, I talked to Terry Taylor. I hope that they bring him up soon. I've only seen him twice on TV, but Taylor called me the other day to say hi. And I guess he's only had 20 matches, but he's an impressive-looking kid, boy. Great physique. And if he's like his dad, he's probably half tough.
Oh, he's a little more than half tough, I think. Believe me. No, it's great to see him.
His dad is tough.
It's great to see him do well. I liked his dad and uncle and enjoyed wrestling, working with those guys. So we'll talk about him more in a later episode of the podcast. But so we've had Nature Boy Buddy Rogers, Nature Boy Buddy Landell. We've had the Jay Lethal imitation. Who else has stolen from you the most, like in more subtle ways? But if you see somebody out there that's kind of nicked you and does a lot of your stuff, who would it be?
Who was stolen from me the most? You mean like the man?
No. We've been through that. I mean, in terms of like maybe some of the spots you do in your look, stuff like that.
I don't know anybody. I mean, it's funny because you can learn every day. You know, every match you're in, if you're with somebody or if you're watching, which I think is very important if you are young in the business or even if you're just on the same card as someone that's good. But I don't see a lot of the guys at all imitating that stuff. I mean, Randy has his own style. AJ does. Roman has his own stuff. Obviously, Omega.
I'm surprised, Nate. I'm surprised nobody does the turnbuckle flip or the drunk fall. I'm surprised some of your trademark stuff hasn't been lifted.
Well, some of the kids can do that. I just don't think they do. I don't think Vince likes it when Ashley does it, because it reminds him of me.
Well, moving on. We just had an anniversary. On December 10th, 1972, Ric Flair had his first match, a 10-minute draw with Scrap Iron George Gadaski at Rice Lake, Wisconsin. Do you remember anything at all about that match?
Yes. Vern Gagne looked at me and said, go out there and wrestle him for 10 minutes. I said, what are we going to do? He said, go out there and show me what you got. Swear to God. That's how I started.
Now, were you heel, babyface? Who called the match? How'd it go down?
Oh, I was a heel. George just said, you know, George Gadeski was one of these great guys that, you know, putting on all these hours, driving a ring truck, put the ring up and all that, and then would get a match, and then he'd referee the rest of them. But he treated me great. He knew that I absolutely knew nothing, and we just did like a headlock, takeover, arm drag, stuff like that. And really, at the end of 10 minutes, I was blowing sky high. You know, even though I was got myself in really good, but that was after the camp ended. So I was in relatively good shape. I started at 310 pounds. By the time the camp was over, I weighed 270. So, yeah, I couldn't wait to bleach my hair. You know what's funny? Bunny Graham, Billy Graham's wife, was the first person to bleach my hair. It'll be 50 years next September. I got to live that long, Marco.
Now, you'll make it that long and then some. And that segues nicely into our friends and foes segment, because the friend is going to be your trainer, the late Vern Gagne. How did you come to train under Vern, Nate? How did you meet him, and what were the circumstances?
Well, I knew Greg from high school. Greg went to Wayzata or Minnetonka High School, I think Wayzata. And I met Greg somewhere over on campus and all that when I was in college. I think Greg transferred to Wyoming. And I was there to play football at Minnesota until my grade point average didn't appeal to the dean or to the coach. But then I met Ken Patera, as I told you, at a club called George's in the Park. And I'm going to see Ken this Saturday, actually, at Icons of Wrestling in Philly. And Ken Patera is the reason I'm in the business. He said to Vern, I'm living with Ric Flair. And he said, Flair, I know that name. He said, yeah, he's apparently a friend of your son, Greg's. He said he wants to be a wrestler, too. So I lived with Ken for 2 years. He went off 72 Olympics. An idea, and Vern sponsored him. The idea was that if he came back with a gold medal, he'd be called the world's strongest man. Well, he 6 weeks before the games, he had to have arthroscopic knee surgery. So 3 weeks he couldn't train, because everything was with your knees with Olympic lifting. So with 3 weeks of training, after being off for 3 weeks, he still won the bronze medal. But he clearly would have won a gold medal had he not been injured. Just a great guy. And, man, he's been through some traumatic, you know, situations in life. That thing with Saito and that, and just that, you know, a couple years in prison as a result of some stupid incident at McDonald's. And then to have, he's got both shoulders replaced, both hips replaced, both knees replaced. And his body has taken a toll on him. What people don't realize about Ken, he was also an alternate on the 72 team in track and field. He threw the shot 68 feet at BYU. So if you make it Olympic team in two sports, you're probably a pretty good athlete.
I would say so. By the way, I just glanced at the lineup for Icons of Wrestling. Your old buddy Shane Douglas is going to be there. I think that should be your final match, you and the Dean.
Oh, he's working, huh?
Yeah.
I'm sure he'll say hi. we always shake hands and walk our own way.
Now, when you started training, were you a wrestling fan per se? Was this something you wanted?
Yes.
Oh, you were always a wrestling fan.
Yeah, but nothing I ever dreamt of that I'd be involved in. Yeah, I loved watching wrestling. Are you kidding me? I dragged my dad down there. Dad, come watch. You know, Crusher, the Bruiser, Vern Gagne, Butch Levy, Leo Namalini, Ilio DiPaolo, Carpentier, Wilbert Snyder. I mean, the guys that came through Minneapolis were just fabulous. It's a Hall of Fame in itself. And eventually I got to meet all those guys. Mad Dog Michon, who I became really good friends with. Gagne, if you want the title back, meet me in the ring. Gagne.
Now, what was the main thrust of Vern's training? Conditioning was a huge part of it, obviously.
Oh, my God. Insane. We had no idea. I was like in the house saying I was going to be like Dick the Bruiser, the Crusher, who I know. Not saying they couldn't have at one time, but they certainly couldn't run 2 miles, do 500 free squats, 200 push-ups, and 200 crunches. It took me 6 hours. I'm betting neither one could have done it, period. But they were later in life. And at one time, you know, the Bruiser, Dick Affleck, played football for the Packers. He was a good athlete. So that, I don't know what the Crusher's background is, but Dick Affleck was a good pro football player, or average.
Now, we had the Crusher in Pittsburgh. He was a rival for Bruno Sammartino.
Sure.
When I was a kid. So I have many memories of him as well.
The bolo punch. Hey, I'm going to meet you guys. He was talking about, when I started talking about the women, because I heard him talking about the dollies at the saloon in Milwaukee. I'll meet my dollies at the saloon in Milwaukee.
Now, you quit at one point, right? You just went home.
Twice. I didn't show up. First time you came and got me, slapped me across the face, threw me out in the front yard, told me I quit everything in the world. I wasn't going to quit him. And the second time, I was just about, I got through the 2 miles, and I was just saying to myself, you know, he's not watching. I'm just going to get in my car and go and hide at the check in a hotel. By the ear, so... It was a learning experience, but the whole thing, it's something I look back on now. I don't know how I did it, but even when I go to train now with Rob, John Cena's guy who I train with regularly, I find myself being able to go back and find that inner, whatever that was that drove me to do that, because I did those 500 squats. There was no such thing as Stairmaster than that when we started, right? Then, of course, all this equipment has come along and all technology has changed. But I did those 500 free squats every day for 20 years until they invented the Stairmaster.
Now, who did you train with?
I still do them now once in a while.
Who did you train with besides Vern? Who were the other teachers at Vern's facility?
Don Morocco, Joe Scarpello, who was a national champion at Iowa. Don Morocco. Jimmy came out there a couple, and Billy Robinson.
What was Billy Robinson like? Because he was a legitimately tough guy, shooter. Yeah. And he was known for being a bully in a situation like that.
He beat us all up. He did. But I didn't think of him being a bully. He just wanted to let us know that he could kick our ass, which he could. You know the story about the Sheik. He kept telling the Sheik was a certifiable great amateur wrestler, freestyle and Greco-Roman. And he'd won it. The AU Nationals in the 220-pound weight class at a body weight of 190 pounds prior to coming out to training there. And Robinson said, I can turn you over, and he couldn't. You know, when you lay in your stomach with freestyle wrestling or Olympic wrestling.
Right, right.
Yeah, the idea is to turn you over to score a point. Robinson couldn't turn him over. So I told him to get in a referee's position. So he got up in a referee's position, his knees planted, his feet planted. And Robinson dropped a knee into the side of his leg that, I thought it killed him. He couldn't get practice for a month. His whole leg swelled up with black and blue.
Now, that's the Iron Sheik, right? Not Eddie Farhat.
No, that's Iron Sheik Khosrow. Yeah,
I
see Khosrow periodically.
See, that's what I mean, though. That's a dick move by Billy Robinson, because that is being a bully, Nate. That's taking advantage of a defenseless guy.
Listen, they used to put us down and face arm, cross face the crap out of us, Mark. It was tough to get back into the business back then. I say people couldn't do it now, but I say that in a way that, why would they want to? Okay? Because back then, I think I was making $50 a night, driving 3,000 miles. So really, who would want to do that? And would you say to your child, hey, go be a pro wrestler, to go through something like that? But it made us all tougher, made us all better. I mean, he would wrestle us into an exhaustion and then put us on our back and put it like a sugar on us, where we couldn't move our arms.
Right.
And then make you fight to get out of it for 2 minutes. And you're wearing a parka because you're 30 degrees or 28 degrees. You can't breathe. You're blowing up. And you can't get away. I mean, that's the kind of stuff they do with the guys in SEAL training. The only thing he didn't do was handcuff us and throw us some water over our head.
well, did you God, ever?
I wouldn't have come back after that.
How often were you in the ring with Vern? Because I don't think you ever had an actual match with Vern, did you?
I did, yeah, on TV.
Really?
I sure did, yeah, yeah.
What was that like?
Yeah, hey, he treated me good. Vern Gagne was tougher than hell, you know.
Oh, yeah, legitimate NCAA champion, all that stuff.
Absolutely, yeah, an Olympic alternate. Yeah, he was tougher than shit. Vern punched out. I can remember, I guess, that Bill Watts gave him some shit at the end of an NWA convention one time. Vern let him have it right there in the fucking lobby of the hotel. Yeah, Vern was fair to nobody. He pulled Don Eagle, this wrestler named Don Eagle out, who did something smart with the ring. He pulled him out from the bottom of a car in downtown Minneapolis. He was hiding under a car to get away from Vern and beat the crap out of him on Hennepin Avenue. Oh, yeah. Vern was tougher than shit.
Now, did Vern stress amateur-style wrestling? I mean, what did he want from the guys he trained?
Well, he liked the amateur stuff, but, you know, what's funny, and he loved it, didn't love it then, but he said, so what have you learned you liked him most? So, me, I was so fascinated with Dusty and Dick Murdoch, who were both there at the time, right? And I fell in love with those guys, Dusty especially, but Murdoch and I were very close. And Murdoch, ladies and gentlemen, was one of the greatest workers I've ever known.
Yep, for sure so he was.
He, Dick Murdoch will always be in the top 10. But he said, what have you learned? And I'll go ahead and learn all this stuff. And I went across. I did the elbow drop from Dusty. He said, get out of here. After all this, that's your favorite move? I think he wanted to slap me right there.
Now, your name is Ric Flair back, correct?
What's that?
Your name, your ring name was Ric Flair right off the bat, right?
Yeah, I wanted to change it. He said, Ric Flair is a cool name. I said, it is? I said, I want to be Ramblin' Ricky Rhodes. He said, no way. I wanted to be Dusty's brother.
Now, it was originally R.I.C.
I'll tell you what's funny. So about a year ago, I was pre-COVID, maybe 2 years ago, I was with Terry Bradshaw at a signing. And Terry Bradshaw says, Ric Flair, he says, you got the coolest name in sports, Ric Flair. I like that. So then I thought back to Vern, you know, because he said, just spell it differently. Go with Ric Flair. And that's how we left it.
It was originally R.I.C.K. Flair. What made you decide to drop the K? Because that became very just distinctive.
It looked cooler. Cosmetically, it looked cooler.
How long did your training take? How long did you actually train with Vern before you were, quote unquote, a professional wrestler?
Either 60 or 80 days.
That's not that long.
No.
It probably seemed a lot longer.
5 days a week. It was, yeah. Especially, it was not inside a bar. It was, you know, in November, it's 20 degrees in Minneapolis. 29 right now, as a matter of fact. So you're training in a barn, and you're learning how to take a backdrop by jumping off the second floor of a hayloft into a hayloft. I mean, it's just a different way of learning.
I'll say. Now, were you good away? Because you went to Japan within a year, which isn't easy. I mean, but
no, I went to Japan right. I went to Japan before I went. Before I think my first trip was Japan. Well, those guys, they just tortured me, man. They made me carry their bags, Murdoch and Rhodes, Skander, Akbar, Nelson Royal. I mean, I used to go to Nelson Royal's room at night crying, say, God, I can't take any more Nelson. Dusty Rhodes and Murdoch came. We're on the fourth floor of my room, came in a room, took the fire extinguisher, loaded me up, sprayed me, and took all my clothes, threw them out of the fourth-story window onto the street. Rookie training camp. That's where Murdoch, we were at the airport, right? And everybody was eating French fries and crap. And that's where, I don't know what made me think I could do it. Everybody was like eating like French. I reached over and grabbed one of Murdoch's French fries. He took a fork and stabbed it all the way through my hand. I got the scar right here to this day. Rookie mistake. Rookie mistake.
Now, what was it like working Vern's terror then? I mean, it was a territory based around Vern, but he didn't necessarily wrestle every show, did he?
No, but he was there. He came to them all. We're as far north as Toronto, as Winnipeg, which was 500 miles each way from Minneapolis. And then we'd go down as far as Springfield, Illinois, which was 400 each way. And do that in the same day, you know what I mean? Or down to Moline, Illinois, and then Chicago, Milwaukee. No, the longest shot was Denver. But I only got to do maybe 10 Denver shows.
How long were you in the AWA?
That's where I wrestled Pedro Morales in Denver.
Now, how long were you in the AWA before you moved to Crockett?
1 year.
And how was that arranged? Did they arrange that for you? How'd that come about?
No, Wahoo McDaniels was in Minneapolis. He left, went down there because his friend George Scott was booking. And the Crockett territory had been a tag team territory. They hired George Scott, and George Scott wanted to make it a singles territory. So Wahoo and I had become very close. Wahoo called me and said, hey, you want to come down here? They'll give you a chance to come down. I said, hell yeah. I said, where is it? He said, Charlotte, North Carolina. I'd never heard of it. I had to know where Raleigh was because I had to learn the Capitals to get out of high school, but that'd be the only reason I knew where Raleigh was. But I flew in, and they picked me up, took me over to a place called the Orvin Court, $9 a night. And then somebody picked me up and took me to the arena, and I wrestled Abe Jacobs that first night, and I was off and running. And I, something I'll always respect to Crockett for, I only had $400 when I left home. Because I was married to Leslie, Megan was just born. And I left them with, you know, like $1,000, you know, who knows. I've never been really good with money. But I had $400. I tried to borrow $400 from my dad. He said, I'm absolutely not investing in something stupid like this, wrestling. And I said to Vern, he said, Vern said, nope. You can make it on your own, kid. This is when you start learning the ropes. So I went down there with $400. And after a week, I went to Jim Crockett and said, I'm sorry to bother you, Mr. Crockett, but I just don't have any money. He said, what do you need? I said, I don't know, God. He said, what about $2,500? I said, $2,500? I must have said it to myself, didn't I? You're going to give me $2,500? He said, yeah, here. Get your wife and family down here. So that was it.
Now, is Vern one of the true all-time greats? Where's he rank among the wrestling legends, Nate?
Oh, God. He's got to be up there. Different style, you know what I'm saying? It's hard. I mean, he certainly was great for his time, but of his time and his era, he was in the top five. He was with Rogers, O'Connor, Billy Darnell, Wilbur Snyder, you know, Carpentier, different style. But Vern used a lot of amateur wrestling in his style, but his drop kick and flying head scissors and stuff. Oh, I'll tell you who else was great in that time frame was Red Bastine. Red Bastine was very helpful to me too, and a great worker.
Now let's talk about one of your foes who was also a friend at one point in your career. He is the total package, Lex Luger. Nate, you made a lot of wrestlers in your career. I think Lex Luger is one of those. You made Lex first by association and then in your matches. I thought he was very much connected to you.
Yes. Yeah, I'm going to. I think he's there this weekend, too. I'm looking, as is Ken Patera. So sometimes I do these shows just because it's fun to see Kevin Nash will be there, Sting will be there. But yeah, Lex, I've got nothing but good things to say about him. He's been through a world of shit, but he's held his head high. And I think the company has him on I don't know what they call those deals, where he's like an ambassador for the WWE.
A Legends deal?
A Legends contract, yeah, which he deserves. He worked hard at a time when the business was tough. He put his time in, he worked hard, and he was put in a tough position. You know, it got heat with other guys because I would take all these press slams and stuff from him, and he couldn't do a lot of other stuff because like Goldberg, in a different way, didn't have the opportunity to learn. Because he looked so good, they go, shit, you're going to be in the main event next week. Remember I told you I had to wrestle him for an hour in Daytona? And he had never wrestled more than 2 minutes, right? So I wanted to kill Bob Roop and Hiro Matsuda, who booked the match, but we made it. I feel terrible what happened to him with his health and all this stuff with Liz and that, but I really like Luger. I have a lot of time for him, and they're doing a documentary on him. I just got to speak on it. And to come back from all that, I think he's a really remarkable human being, and I'm glad to see that he's in a good place, which he is.
Well, you kind of touched on this, but when Lex first came to Crockett, how green was he? Because he'd been wrestling a couple of years in Florida where you, like you said, had that long match, but he had barely wrestled and his matches were kept short, which was advisable, but as you mentioned, it didn't help him learn.
Ask me that one more time.
How green was he when he came to Crockett?
Green. But when you have to use that measuring stick in terms of if you're putting with me, Tully, Arn, and JJ, you're going to be green. I mean, like everybody's green at some point or another, but to come in and expect to perform at that level. So, we all helped him because we all liked him. And he was like this little kid. He didn't drink or anything, And then, of course, he was just an incredibly handsome guy. I had a ball with him. I used to take him out and have him take off his shirt in the bars. And
well, let's talk about that, Nate, because...
Hey, just like I did with Batista. Hey, if I could get Batista in a bar at night in the old days with Evolution, because Randy and Hunter would never go out, I'd have Dave's shirt off in Fargo, North Dakota in 30 below zero weather. Every chick in Fargo was there.
Now, speaking of that, Luger's body was incomparable, wasn't it?
Oh,
I mean,
my God.
It would be a top body today, any generation, really.
Absolutely.
Now, go
he's
ahead.
He's the first guy to taught me anything about nutrition.
Is that right?
Yes. Yep.
Lex went right into the mix of the Four Horsemen, first as an associate and then as a full member. Was that too much too soon?
No, it worked, but it was a lot of pressure on him when they put him in singles matches with me for the world title. As long as he was with me and Tully and Arn, all he had to do was flex and slam a guy and suplex somebody, and he wasn't afraid to feed in on and stuff like that and take comebacks on him. He wasn't, he didn't have the experience to be great, but he filled the role very well. And he looked like $1 million. How can you look like that and not add something to the party? You know what I mean?
And my last number 65084, Equal Housing Lender. There's never been a better time to refinance than right now. With real estate being so hot, your house could be worth more than ever. SaveWithConrad.com can help you use that new equity to pay off your credit cards or get rid of your PMI, saving you thousands. Interest rates are still at historic lows, but experts expect the rates to rise next year. Let SaveWithConrad.com get you the best rate you've ever had and save thousands. You don't need perfect credit or money out of your pocket, and you won't make another payment until next year. Hurry to SaveWithConrad.com.
Your take on removing Ole from the Horsemen and breaking up that original chemistry, a bad idea. What was your take at the time?
Well, I thought Ole was fabulous, but he had decided at this point in life he wanted to watch his son, who was an amateur wrestler and that. Kind of like I got to do when Eric fired me, I just went home and played with Ashley and Reed. And I had more time off during those time. And I had zero time off when I was NWA champion to spend with Megan and David. So I did, he lived right there in Atlanta and he wanted to spend more time at home. But Ole, replacing Ole is a big step. Ole had a great interview. He was a good worker, solid, but he was believable. And Ole and Arn together were good. Not nearly as good as Arn and Tully, but old style, Ole was good.
Well, Luger was in the Horsemen for less than a year. Was that the plan when he joined? I mean, you had to break him off and go babyface and do matches with you. But then the Horsemen became a revolving door, which wasn't good.
Well, no, we had Barry for a long time. That wasn't right away. We had Barry for a long time. So I think we had Barry for at least a year and a half, didn't we?
Before something like that,
revolving door. Yeah. So started out with Arn or with Ole, then it went to Lex, and then Barry. Barry is a great worker. Like, you know, we're talking about using the word great freely. Barry Windham was a great worker. So to put him with the rest of us, we were at our all-time high as a heel combination. Never anything like it in the business, even close, for four guys.
Now, you feuded with Luger in 88.
In my modest expectation.
Oh, no. I think that was the best version of the Horsemen in terms of the actual working ability. I do have affinity for the original version with Ole because it was the original version. Yeah. And nothing in many cases, whether it's a musical group, a wrestling faction, rarely does anything top the original version.
Exactly.
Now, like I said, you feuded with Luger in 88. Those matches were good. Some of the finishes weren't, like that stoppage for blood at the Great American Bash. Not a great finish, but I guess what else were you going to do?
I don't know. That's I can remember they almost the commissioner looked at me and said, if I find out you cut yourself tonight, you'll never wrestle in Maryland again. The old guy used to drive me crazy. I said, oh, I'm not doing anything like that. I said, I know who you are. You always get out there telling me I can do it and you start bleeding. I said, that's by accident. He said, bullshit. You're always cutting yourself. I see you. I'm watching. No dummy. Been watching this for years. You know, okay. So when we did it, actually, I whacked myself so good that it was believable. And it was different. A lot of people didn't like it, but it was unique and I was beat. You know what I mean? He had me beat. But they had the referee, which I hadn't seen. And Dusty came up with that. And, you know, they stopped fights now, UFC and boxing, for blood. And I was bleeding more than those guys were. So I probably whacked myself two or three times.
How was Luger to work with behind the scenes in those days when you worked against him?
Oh, easy, fun. He just would say, I told him, he and Sting, I never said anything to the guys. Guys, let me hear the crowd. You've got confidence in me. We'll tear it down. All I would say to those guys is, look, we got to follow Tully and Arn and Akita and Dusty and all and whoever the Road Warriors. We got to follow those guys. So look through the curtain every time you get a chance to look and look at what they're doing, because we got to give them something better. We're on last. That's our job. And I'm not going to the bar until the ring, until we make the crowd at a frenzy like these guys are. And following the Road Warriors against following the Road Warriors against Tully and Arn was brutal. The Midnight against the Rock and Roll, come on. I mean, those cards were so hard. If you were on last and the guy was with me, they knew, number one, I was going to carry 14 blades and cut myself 14 times. And number two, the match was over until we got him standing the way we wanted him, because I refused to go back to the dressing room second best. Not that I didn't a few times, but it wasn't because I wanted to. Just sometimes the matches before us were so damn good. A lot of talent, man.
Now, you left for WWE in 1991, and Luger won the WCW title and was kind of a lame duck. That's not an ideal circumstance to win your first world title, is it?
No, absolutely not. All Herd had to do was pay me the money he owed me. So worse than that, all he had to do was fly me to Columbus, where I was going to drop it to Barry on TV. He said, screw you. It's documented. So I said, it's not screw me. It's you, screw you, Jimmy. I was gone, and 3 months later, he was fired. So, or something like that, or a year.
I thought it worked out great for you, Nate. Pretty good run in New York.
Fantastic. I got to hang out with DiBiase, Piper, Hogan, the Nasty Boys, the Road Warriors. Brett, I mean, and by the way, I was looking at the comments last week about good guys who could sell real well. I did not mean to leave out Bret Hart. Bret Hart could sell his ass off. So for those that I upset with that comment, I got to throw Bret in there. Bret could really sell for a well-built, bigger guy.
So, well, as far as I'm concerned, we're here to upset people. So mission.
No, but I mean, you know, I'm always, when you ask me those questions on the fly, I can think of the first three, but I didn't mean to exclude Bret, because I always thought Bret was a really convincing seller.
No, I have lots of regard for Bret and all the aspects of his work for sure. Now, Luger then went to WWE and got a big babyface push as a Hogan replacement. But WWE never gave him the title, never went all the way with them. Why do you think that was? You have any insight on that?
I do not. I've never asked. But to take him all that way and then not give him the title is what killed him. Riding around in that bus all summer, whatever it was called.
The Lex Express.
Yeah. And I thought for sure they were going to put the title on him. So I don't know. I can venture to guess that it was somebody, you know, pulling a political string here or there, but I don't know the exact fact.
Okay, then Luger showed up on the premiere of Nitro out of nowhere. The first Nitro ever at the Mall of America, Minneapolis. Had been at SummerSlam for WWE just 8 days later, but had been working without a contract and let his no-compete expire. Were you surprised when that happened? Heck, even I was.
Yeah, I guess I was. But I'd heard that, I'd heard, you know, because that, you know, the grapevine runs, I'd heard somewhere along the line that his contract was up. I did not know he'd be showing up there. But that's, you know, I don't know what to say about that.
Well, Nate, the trick was that he worked without a contract for the period of his no-compete.
Yeah.
He was negotiating, but you know, the no-compete expired, so he could go from one program right to the other, which was extremely rare in those days. And yeah. It did make a big impact, but I thought he kind of spun his wheels during that run in WCW. He won the title again, feuded with the NWO, joined the NWO. But how much of it was really memorable? And I don't think that's on Lex, but again, not a lot stood out.
Well, number one, nobody that was up against NWO stood out.
That's true.
Because that was the show. It was built around NWO. So, I mean, Sting always stood out, but... you know, it was a new time, a new faction, and they ran with it. And they were successful with it. Ultimately, I don't think that NWO. You know, I tell Kevin this all the time. If it just stayed those three guys, they might still be there. Does that make sense?
If it had been kept small and exclusive, it would have had a much longer and better run.
By the end of two years later, there were 30 guys in NWO. It was like, if you think they diluted the Horsemen, what the hell did they do to the NWO? It was Kevin, Scott, and Hulk. That was it. After that, it was all, I know who some of the people were. Then there was a red and a white, but I mean, the NWO, you saw who got inducted in the Hall of Fame, and Waltman. Waltman was great there. So, but after that, it was all diluted.
Well, I thought that the turning point downward was when they started to bring in guys that weren't ex-WWE. The whole idea is that it was an invading army, even though that violated copyright and had me do depositions with effing Jerry McDevitt for 8 hours at a time. But you know, when they started bringing in, you know, I mean, no knock on Buff Bagwell and no knock on Paul White, but that wasn't the intent when they started the NWO.
Exactly.
So
it's not an indictment of anybody. It's just things that happen, you know, and nobody knows. I suppose Kevin probably knows. I've never asked him. I'll see him this weekend. It's an interesting question, but I don't know why they kept adding on to it.
Now, Lex never went back to WWE. Do you think he burned a bridge when he showed up on that first Nitro and surprised WWE?
Probably. I would guess, yeah.
Because they don't take stuff like that well, do they?
Well, there's two ways to look at it. Either they were aware of it and didn't care about signing him, or they were mad. And I've never heard, I've never asked. So,
yeah.
I mean, it goes back to the thing with Brett. They just couldn't afford to pay Brett the money that he was making. And that's how this whole Montreal Screwjob thing came about. At the end of the day, it had to be about money.
At the end of the day, it always is.
Yeah. So there again, I'm just on the outsider. I've heard 30 different stories, but if they're struggling with a payroll issue, I mean, to this day, the company will make, you can see a guy gone tomorrow that's not earning what they think he should be earning, or is making more than they should be earning, and not contributing enough. Same applies to the women.
Yeah, but now it's a little disingenuous because they do have those giant TV deals. That said, if a guy's not pulling his weight, that's the way the wrestling industry's already worked.
Well, it's not just the wrestling industry. It's pro sports. We always throw it under the umbrella of wrestling. If you're not making it as a lawyer, you don't become a partner. If you're not making it in football, they cut you. If you're not making it in basketball, they cut you. Or you go home in basketball with a toenail that's bothering you and take a month off making $40 million.
Or you refuse to get vaccinated, you don't play at all. Then again, I'm not sure if Kyrie Irving is getting paid or not, but I imagine he is.
Absolutely.
Now, finishing up with Lex. Lex was a big star. Could he have been a bigger star?
I don't know the answer to that. In which company?
Either one, really. You see, I think Lex was awesome. I don't think he's remembered like you or Sting or Mach. I think he's just a slight level below, and that's no knock, but that's where he is.
Well, no, but that's longevity. And we talked about that word last week. You don't become one of us if I'm allowed to be in that group in a 10-year period. And that's basically how long his career was, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, now let's move on. Let's look at
Am I right about that, Hall?
No, you're right. I think when you stick around...
From 89 to 2000, something like that? No, 80s, like 15 years.
Yeah. He was around about 15, 16 years. I think when you're around as long as guys like you and Sting and Randy and Hunter, I think that's when you go from top performer to iconic. I think that's when you become part of the vocabulary when it comes to pro wrestling. I think that is a difference, yes.
Absolutely. Shawn Michaels, Undertaker. Yep.
Well, let's move ahead and look to some of today's wrestlers as we do every week. And one guy we've not yet talked about at length is Bryan Danielson, former Daniel Bryan, now with AEW. Is he comparable to you as a worker? How do you see his work?
It's okay.
You just pissed a lot of people off because they think he's everything in a bag of chips. Okay is not the word they're looking for, Nate.
I didn't say he wasn't a good worker. You asked me what I thought. I'll tell you what. I thought this is how I feel. When Hunter put him over at whatever WrestleMania that was, that made him. And he's a very talented kid. Don't misunderstand me. But you have to have one match, one place, one day, somewhere that makes you who you are. And remember Hunter, I don't know what WrestleMania that was. I think it was New York, where Hunter put him over. What number was that?
I forget, Nate. I do not know.
Yeah. And, Hunter, who only wrestles once in a while, came out. And the match started out slow, but they ended up having a world-class match. So, he's a hell of a performer. I don't see him as being Kenny Omega. I like him. It's just asking my opinion.
Oh, no. I'm not. And I'm not asking you to say what you think. I think that he's a real good worker. I think he's at the top of the pile. But I got to be honest.
Is he a babyface now?
No, he's a heel right now.
Okay. Well, as a babyface, he's not Ricky Steamboat. As a heel, he's not me.
That's an accurate way of describing it, I think.
If that pisses people off, then they just got to live with history.
Well, I can't disagree. In fact, I agree wholeheartedly. And it was WrestleMania 30, by the way, Nate. I was kind of looking it up. Triple H and Daniel Bryan.
They tore the joint down, but that is the night that made Brian. Yep, I like him a lot personally, but when you start asking me to talk about who's great and who's not, I mean, he's got a style. He's not AJ Styles by any means.
How much does his size hurt?
Well, I was going to say, comparable size. He's a little bit smaller than AJ, I think, but he's not AJ Styles.
Well, what do you like about his work? What do you like? What do you not like? What are pros and cons?
I like his conditioning. I like the fact that he works hard. He'll do anything. It looks like he sacrifices his body at all odds. I mean, he throws himself around and takes some incredible bumps. That stuff, that one bump he does off the top rope, he's done it a couple of times. Nothing less than incredible. Does that make sense? I don't know who he was working with, but he does that suplex where he lands on his stomach. No, he's a hell of a hand. But you're asking me, once again, and I'm not going to budge on who I think is good and who's great. I think he's very good.
I like him better as a heel, like now in AEW. I think he's got the condescending thing down pat. I think when he's a babyface, he doesn't have half as much personality. But then again, I guess that can be said
of a lot of guys. It's more believable, though. There's another guy. He can sell his ass off. So when he's making a comeback, it's more fun to watch a guy like him making a comeback against the bigger guys. Does that make sense?
Oh, no question.
Yeah, it's harder for me to believe that as a heel, he's going to hold someone down. Does that make sense?
Especially if it's a bigger opponent.
Yeah, exactly. As a babyface, who's just average size, but really loaded with talent, I much prefer him to see fighting from underneath as a fan.
What kind of match could you have had with him?
Phenomenal. But here's the bay face. I can't do half the shit he could do, but I can take the shit that he would give me. Does that make sense? I could have.
A perfect description, which moves on now to our next topic.
Yeah, no, it's kind of like Randy. I couldn't do a lot of fancy things like these again today, but I can take it. So, and sometimes taking it, it's just as impressive as giving it.
Sometimes taking it's more important than giving it.
Yeah, exactly.
Now let's move on to a friend of yours and mine, a Pittsburgh native, recently retired, Kurt Angle. Now, when you talk about great, that word 100% applies to Kurt Angle, doesn't it?
Absolutely. G-R-E-A-T, Kurt Angle.
Well, I think Kurt is one of the very few legitimately comparable to you as a worker. And I don't say that lightly. I think he's top five all time as a worker.
I do too. I absolutely do. Did he ever tell you about the time I took him down?
No, but you're about to.
I'm just kidding.
So you don't think you could take him down?
Absolutely not. Hey, I grabbed Ronda Rousey one time by the arm and I said, low single. She said, try it, I'll kill you.
Well, let me tell. Can I tell a quick Kurt Angle story?
Yeah,
I covered Kurt Angle in high school. I was a writer then for the Post Gazette, as you know, and here in Pittsburgh.
Yeah,
and he was a great high school football player in Mount Lebanon, a great wrestler, obviously at Mount Lebanon. Went on to Clarion, and of course, win the Olympic gold. So I was at a place called Tom's Diner, which is a late night. It's closed now, but it was a late night food spot in Pittsburgh. After I was out, I was like in my 20s, and Kurt was a senior in Mount Lebanon. So we're leaving Tom's Diner, and I see a couple guys getting a fight on the sidewalk. A bigger guy looked like a football player is going after another slightly smaller guy, and the slightly smaller guy just takes him down on the sidewalk and stretches him.
Yeah.
And that's the first time I met Kurt Angle face-to-face.
Yeah.
I talked to him on the phone for stories. I went up, I go, hey, are you Kurt Angle?
Yeah.
And he goes, yeah. And he looks at me, couldn't figure out who I was. I go, hey, I'm Mark Madden. I've talked to you for the Post-Gazette.
Yeah.
And he like kind of does double take it. I go, don't worry, this won't end up in the paper.
Well, listen, I'm pissed off at Kurt, as he knows, for one reason.
Why?
When he's Hall of Fame induction, I'm the reason they went to the WWE. I ran into him in a gym in Gold in Memphis, Tennessee, and I was at WCW, and he was getting ready to decide who he was going to call and go to work for. And so I go, he said, you know, Mr. Flair, it's not Mr. Flair, it's Mr. Angle, but thank you. He said, I'm considering WWE or WCW. I said, consider no longer. I'll call Vince McMahon for you right now, and I did. The rest of history. He would have died. They would have eaten that kid alive at WCW. I don't mean physically eat him alive, but the politics that would have been stacked on top of him, a gold medal winner who's tough, that would have been everything a WCW would be barking at.
Let me jump right to the chase, Nate. Hulk Hogan could not have beaten him fast enough.
No, not Hulk Hogan. Just I'm not going to put that on Hulk. Listen, Hulk wasn't running the company. I got news for you. There was a lot of people that were running the company. A lot of voices. Hulk gets too much heat for it. The one thing I can tell you that I wasn't running the company. It's like when I'm the booker that made all these bad decisions. I was on a booking committee. But the only name on the committee that meant anything is mine. Does that make any sense? And that's not taken away from anybody. But me and Kevin Sullivan, who to this day I say is a genius, could talk all day long. And Eric walked in and said, we're doing this. So why are we wasting our time? You know what I mean? It's they did what they wanted to do.
Well, getting it back.
Just a scapegoat. The booking committee is just a scapegoat.
Well, getting back to Kurt, Kurt took to wrestling like a duck to water. I can never say he was green, not even for a second. He was a natural. And before you knew it, he was calling matches in the ring. A lot of guys get into it with an amateur background, albeit not as impressive as Kurt's with the gold medal. But what made him so good so fast?
Well, you know who I compare him to, and he compares himself to her too, is Ashley. Some people catch on really quick. Of course, Ashley didn't have an amateur background, but let me tell you about Ashley. That's just a side note. Reed was a 14-time state champion in North Carolina and a 4-time national champion at Tulsa Nationals, AU Nationals. I took him to every tough tournament in the country. Ashley could beat Reed until he was 16 years old. But, I mean, they went to war. Ashley was so strong and so physically gifted that he couldn't compete with her athleticism. And of course, she wanted to, you know, have fun. All Reed's friends loved Ashley and all that. But Kurt just, I mean, the only guy I've ever seen, and he never ultimately was the athlete that Kurt is, but these amateurs that come along, he's better than Jack Briscoe. And nobody was tougher than Jack, 31-0 his junior year with 31 pins at Oklahoma. I don't think it's ever been duplicated. But Kurt just took to it, and then he added that aerial game. And, I mean, he's just an incredible athlete, as is Brock. I mean, I'm watching Brock on TV, really enjoying his new stuff now. I like him without Heyman.
It's different, and I like Heyman with Reigns. I think that's shaping up something there.
Kurt
moving forward.
Guys, Kurt was so diversified that he could have this phenomenal phenomenal technical match with Sean, or these great matches with Taker. And even at my age, he gave me some good matches, you know. I don't know if anybody ever believed him, but I was so confident in him. I took every bump he could give me because I knew I was going to land the right way with him. You know, there was never any doubt.
Well, you had a pretty good match with him. I just watched on YouTube in 2005. Do you have any recollection of that one in particular?
I landed in L.A. and Pat Patterson said, you're going to wrestle Kurt Angle. And I said, why? He said, because Vince wants you to. I said, for how long? He said, 20 minutes. I said, 20 minutes, me and Kurt Angle? You got to be kidding me. Kurt was so mad at me because I wouldn't let him lead. We're going to my pace, Kurt, tonight. Sorry, brother. And every time you try to stretch me, I'm going to hang on to the rope.
But it was a good match.
It was okay. Considering I was 56 years old.
Oh, I think it was better than okay. And I think that says a lot about you at 56, but says a lot about Kurt as well.
Well, Kurt, yeah, he made me. I mean, I just said, Kurt, we're going out to the floor. He said, for what? I said, give me that belly to belly on the floor. He said, why? I said, so I can catch my breath. What do you think? I can't just take you down and hold you and recoup here, kid.
Now, WWE had Kurt do comedy a lot of the time.
Yeah.
Was that good or bad? He's an Olympic gold medalist, and I think he's a pretty funny guy, and some of his promos were laugh out loud funny, but...
But he made it work. That's what makes you great. You use that word great, it's being able to survive any scenario that puts you into it and make it work. And did I like it? No, but it worked. And it was humorous. And the stuff with him and Austin was fabulous. You know what I mean?
Oh, no,
But when you talk about great, I mean, Kurt was tight. His punches, his kicks, he never looked like he was out of control. You know what I mean? You have to remember, you get 5 or 8 guys in the ring, the camera's always on you. So you can't be hitting a guy like this. Or, you know what I mean? You've got to think that the camera's right on you every time you punch somebody. And Kurt is never looking awkward. He's throwing in a good punch. He's throwing a good kick. He stays tight. He stays close. He keeps it physical. Yet you can't feel him. I mean, he's like this. I tied up with him. I said, holy shit. The kid ties up like Steamboat. I mean, he's that good.
Now, Kurt wrestled his whole career with a broken neck, which he sustained actually even before winning the gold at the Olympics. That caused him some problems in later life. I mean, he had a great career, but boy, to take that kind of risk, I mean, you know, I'm not saying he did the wrong thing, but I'm glad he got through it as well as he did.
I feel the exact same way. But make no mistake, and I will say this, I'll say no more. I cracked C5 and 6 in my neck in 1988, right before I wrestled Steamboat, the 3 matches. Dusty gave me a DDT, and it leaned on the side of my head. And that neck pain, I never had surgery, but that neck pain might have been the worst thing I've ever felt, including the abdominal stuff I went through 4 years ago. That pain in my neck, and every night I had to go to the ring, fortunately, with Arn and Tully and Barry, and I would just get in the ring and, like, chop somebody, even though I couldn't swing my neck at all. But in 3 months, it healed, and I lucky as hell. But that neck pain, boy, I can only imagine what he went through, and you know, I can only read, which would account for, you know, some of the issues that slowed him down. But he's come back from that. Kurt Angle is a man and a half, and got a great guy.
No, one of my favorite people, his wife Giovanna is awesome.
Yeah.
The kids, I mean, I just love the Angles, and they're Pittsburgh people, they're lifers. They still live, Kurt still lives here, so they all still live here. But Kurt's a Pittsburgh lifer, which I really respect. Now, we got a couple other people we'll get to next week because we're just buzzing along here with a lot of material. But I want to get to some tweets. We get tweets, Nate. People want to ask questions. Most of them are really stupid because, well, that's what Twitter's all about. But let me get the one from Frank that I'm curious to hear your answer here. But if you were in the JJ role today, who would be your choices to be in the Four Horsemen? Now, that's a pretty lengthy list, I'm sure, but do any pop to mind?
Oh, I've heard that question before. It changes every day. I mean, it would be Roman Reigns. It would be Randy Orton. It would be AJ Styles. And trying to think well.
Roman Reigns, Randy Orton, AJ Styles. You need somebody to do the job, Nate.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. Well, that's just it. They beat AJ every week. Doesn't make a difference. He's so damn good. Trying to think on the roster. Oh, Dolph Ziggler. Dolph.
Now I got the sun shining through on me, Nate. I look like an avenging angel.
Dolph Ziggler.
Dolph Ziggler, there you go. So that
get
so
a build a studio like I got. Next week, when you open the door, I'm going to have all my memorabilia. All my Ric Flair drip shit, all my Shambaya with Bad Bunny, all my athletic awards, my Heisman Trophy, all my shit.
Your Heisman Trophy. They should have given that to Kenny Pickett from Pitt this week, for God's sakes.
Oh, what, for faking the slide?
Oh, no. I abused him
Come
for
on.
That.
Come on.
So we got Roman Reigns, Randy Orton.
That cost him, though. That cost him the Heisman Trophy.
No, it didn't. AJ Styles and Dolph Ziggler. There you go.
There you go. That'd be a rough crew to handle, both in the ring and socially.
Let's go to Brandon. And while you answer the question, I'm going to fix my blinds so I don't look ridiculous. I would love to build a studio, but I'm not Ric Flair. I don't live that way.
Oh, yeah. Okay. You got where to go. You're going to die without money.
Brandon tweets, yes, I intend to die with all that money. Brandon tweets, Rick, who would you say is the most underrated performer today?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. You know who I like a lot? I can't think of his name. Who's the guy that plays the guitar now?
Oh, Elias.
No, not Elias. The other guy on SmackDown. Rick Boogs.
Well, the fact that I didn't remember his name doesn't speak well.
No, but he's only been out there a few times, but the little bit I've seen him in the ring, he looks very impressive.
Here's one from Gary. He wants you to tell the story about when Gene Anderson broke the cane over your nose.
Hurt.
What was that? Valentine and Flair versus Sheik and Snuka, correct?
Yes.
Now, what happened there? I don't remember that, to tell you the truth.
Well, Gene was a stiff prick anyway, and a mean bastard. So we just, in the old days, we didn't think about, gimmicking things, if that's the word. So Gene just, that was the angle. I got ready, said, I'm going to hit you in the face with the cane. I said, I knew it was coming. Let my hand up. So, of course, he broke my nose and opened me up like 30 stitches.
30 stitches?
Yeah.
And what were the repercussions afterwards? What did you say? What was said to him?
I said, ouch. And you miserable. There was no beating up Gene Anderson for me. Sorry. That wouldn't have happened either.
Here's one from Rob. Rob,
I think I got 30 stitches with that. I can't remember exactly, but I know he broke my nose.
Nate, Rob wants to know, and this is a good question. What's your favorite bottle of wine after 5 p.m., of course?
King's Estate Pinot Noir.
Now, are you a xenophile? Are you like a fancy schmancy wine guy?
I'm an Oregon. It's got to be light. I drink it on ice. One glass of wine, 8 ounces of water. 20 glasses of wine, 28-ounce containers of water.
Wow.
I bring home food from the restaurant I'm at, watch SportsCenter, check the ratings on our podcast, and say night-night.
And finally, here's one more. I think we have one more tweet. No,
Or FaceTime with Wondrous Wendy.
Well, J.A. tweets, what is the favorite promo you've ever cut? And boy, that's a hell of a question. I have my ideas, but what is your favorite promo ever?
That I'm a limousine riding, jet flying, kiss stealing, wheeling dealing, limousine riding, jet flying, son of a gun, Rolex wearing, diamond ring wearing. Hell yeah. Love the women all night long and having a hard time. Whew, holy God, I get it done. Combination of all those. Well, I spent more money on spilt liquor last year, kid, than from one end of this earth to the other that you made. Woo!
I like the classic Alligators promo, yeah. And I also like the Golden Spoon promo. Do you remember that one?
Yep.
That was extremely good.
Born with a golden spoon.
Well, I got to be honest. I mean,
living in the biggest house on the biggest side of town.
I got to be honest, like your promos back then that you just did off the cuff with a couple bullet points in mind, nothing beats those. And I know they script them now and they scripted a lot of yours, but I just thought the ad-libby type stuff.
Nobody scripted mine until I got the WWE.
That's what I mean. That's what I mean.
The second time, yeah.
Oh, not the first. Oh, that's right. The first time it was different.
Yeah.
Now, there's a couple other loose news items I want to talk about.
Scrutinized, but not scripted.
Oh, yeah, very closely scrutinized, I think. There's a couple other items I want to go over, but there's one I'm not even sure you're aware of, but the big fuss in AEW was Taz's kid debuted Friday night, Hook. He'd been on TV like forever, never wrestled, but he finally debuted. He beat Fuego del Sol, who's an enhancement guy, but a very good enhancement guy, and he had this kind of like MMA-style work in an MMA style entry. I don't know if you saw it or the reaction to it, but what have been some of the biggest debuts you've ever witnessed? The biggest and best debuts that you've seen in wrestling?
Well, recently, I mean, the one that really stands out to me is when AJ showed up. Is it 5 years ago now?
Right.
Out of nowhere. And I'd always hoped he'd come here, but I guess he'd gone from TNA to Ring of Honor or Japan. But when AJ Styles walked out on Raw or SmackDown, whatever night it was, I thought, I mean, he was over with, everybody knew who he was. And he's been over ever since. Other debuts, I don't know.
I really liked when Jericho walked out on Raw, but then again, everybody knew it was coming.
When was that?
Boy, I forget what year it was. It must have been 98, maybe.
Oh, when he came from WCW?
Came from WCW, right.
Oh, and yeah.
He cut the promo, interrupted The Rock's promo.
Oh, yeah. I do remember that. Yeah. Yeah. Well, Chris has always been well received, you know, and a good promo guy, too.
None others come to mind. What about when the Nature Boy walked out on that Tuesday Night Titans with the belt? That was a pretty big deal.
Yeah, also because of where it was, when I walked out after being off TV for a year to become part owner of the company, we were in Charlotte that night. And that was pretty cool for myself, you know.
Jericho debuted in 99, I think. So go ahead. I'm sorry. Okay.
No, I was going to say a big night for me would have been when I first came back to WWE in 2001. When I walked out the door, we were in Charlotte. And Vince gave me 48 hours to make up my mind if I wanted to come back to work or not. So, you know how that goes. I don't want to talk to a lawyer. Don't have your agent call me. This is you and me talking. You got till Monday. I have a contract in the building. Okay.
There's a lot of fuss now because some guys who are perceived, I should say, to be key guys in wrestling are free agents, leaving NXT, Johnny Gargano and Kyle O'Reilly. I mean, what's your level of familiarity like with them, Nate? And what should be the determining factor in a wrestler's free agency? I know guys that took less money to go to AEW rather than stay in WWE. And I get it, but I don't get it. So where do you weigh in?
Well, I don't know enough. I don't know. I don't. I've met Gargano, but just know him and say hi. I don't know the other fellow at all. But when you leave the WWE, you're taking a big step. Because I don't see where they fit in when they're leaving NXT. As a result, I imagine a frustration of not being brought up to the main roster. I guess that would be the reason they're leaving. You know, eventually Tony is not going to be hiring everybody. So I don't.
I disagree. I think he'll be hiring everybody in perpetuity, and I think it's going to cause him some problems sooner or later.
You think he'll hire him right away?
I don't know if he'll hire them, but he's going to keep hiring guys. That's their booking. Their booking is new matches and surprise debuts, but they already have 15 pounds of sugar for a 10-pound bag, and it's going to drive some people to New York. There's no question about that in my mind.
Yeah, drive some people, but who's Vince going to take from there?
I don't know, but he'll take somebody just for the sake of taking somebody, at least initially. Yeah. But Nate, they're talking about bringing the Briscoes in from Ring of Honor, now that Ring of Honor's done. They had a confrontation at Ring of Honor's final battle pay-per-view. It was FTR showed up and confronted the Briscoes, and they brawled. But Santana and Ortiz are awesome, and they almost never wrestle on TV. Shawn Spears, the former Ty Dillinger, never wrestles on TV. Lance Archer, Brian Cage. There are some guys they already have who are great talents that are never on TV anymore.
Yeah, I don't have the answer, Mark. I wish I did.
Well, what would be?
I watch the shows because I want to be able to talk about it intelligently with you, but I don't have the answer to those questions.
Oh, Nate, I have no desire to talk intelligently, so don't back yourself into a corner like that.
No, but I meant I don't. I thought Brian Cage was going to be a big part of the program, and you're right. I very rarely see him.
There you go.
So he got that big push for a while, and then I just saw him for the first time. I think there was 8 guys in the ring the other night. Some kind of a tag match, but you know, he was being featured in the single for a while, and then I don't know why he didn't end up.
Yeah, well, I mean, if I were Gargano and O'Reilly, I'd stay in WWE. And maybe they yet will, because here's how I look at it, Nate, and I'm being very honest. I look at NXT 2 hours of TV time, SmackDown 2 hours of TV time, Raw 3 hours of TV time. That's 8 hours of TV time total. AEW has 3 hours of TV time total because those YouTube shows don't count. I would take my chances if I trusted my talent with the 8 hours of TV time.
Yeah, but there again, I don't think Vince is passing out money right now. Unless you're a really successful, proven talent and have done something spectacular on Tony's show or otherwise, I wouldn't advise either company to hire somebody.
No question. Now, I'm just saying all things being equal.
It's hard. Yeah. All things being equal, you're right. But I think right now the development, one of the problems is that the developmental program for both men and women isn't developing enough people. And how long can you keep paying all these kids to train to wrestle? That makes sense?
No question. And I don't blame Vince at all for releasing the guys he's released from NXT, because to quote Judge Smales from Caddyshack, the world needs ditch diggers too. Not everybody's going to be good enough to be on big time TV.
Exactly.
And sometimes you have to find another profession. I know I did.
Yeah.
So
it's sports and it's life. There's not always going to be a perfect spot for you to land. And that
can be
a business, sports, management, whatever. It's only a few of us, and I'm thankfully one of them that found my niche and got to be part of it and still love it 50 years later.
Now, Nate, before we wrap this up, because again, what a great show, and I keep moving my head behind the microphone, I just want to point out, like I did before the show, I'm wearing merchandise today from the greatest sports team in the world, Liverpool Football Club. 19-time champions of England, 6-time champions of Europe. You can take your Michigan, you can take your Tampa Bay Bucks. There's only one Liverpool Football Club.
Really?
Yes.
Well, next week I'll have my Buccaneer or Packer stuff on.
Yeah, depending on who wins, right?
Or my Michigan stuff.
Depending on who wins, right?
Well, I just have an assortment of favorites.
That's actually a very diplomatic way to put it.
Hey, by the way, the Penguins beat the Capitals. I watched.
And then beat the Anaheim Ducks the next night, Nate. The Penguins on a roll.
Crosby's back, 7 assists. I track it. I track it for you.
Well, maybe.
Tell him to get rid of his girlfriend. When he's single, he plays better.
You know what I wanted to do, don't you?
What?
I wanted to fix him up with Ashley back when. I'm serious. I mean, it's always one of them's had a girlfriend or a boyfriend at the time.
Yeah, but it would have been very hard for him to be the second best athlete in the family.
I think he would have been very accepting. I think he would have taken a few years off his career, but, you know, hey, live Woo! And learn. Nate, great stuff as always. We'll do it again next week.
Hey, it's tough to be a Flair.
So I hear. That's
red whiskey for me and water for my horse.
Woo! That's Ric Flair. I'm Mark Madden.
5 o'clock somewhere, sometime.
Thank you for checking out Woo Nation Uncensored.
Woo!